We are definitely not in the business of doing annual gift guides, but we do have a few things this year we think you should keep in mind when you're writing your wish list. One is a terrific new cookbook called Season by Nick Sharma. It's a super personal book about being a gay Indian immigrant, but he uses these powerhouse flavors to connect us to his story. And Nick talked about it with our friend Russ Parsons.
Nick Sharma, it's so great to have you here today.
Hi, Russ. Thank you for having me here today.
Now, you were raised in India and you moved to the United States as an adult, and you seem to have instinctively adapted the flavors of your home to the dishes of your adopted country. And your partner's from the South, and so there's this really interesting adaptation of Indian spicing to Southern technique.
Right. My husband Michael's from the South. His family lives on a farm right on the border of Virginia and North Carolina, and the food that they eat, it's interesting. It reminds me of some of the dishes that I grew up with in India, but in a very different way. You know, like biscuits, for example, right? Like biscuits, you use fat to kind of create that flaky texture. And then you have parathas, which are cooked in India. And you use fat again there in the dough. You cut it through to give a flaky texture to the flatbread. So I started noticing a lot of these little nuances in cooking techniques as well as the food that was being cooked. Okra. Okra is big in the South. My husband loves okra. Okra is big in India too. And then spices. This is something that I've noticed, that a lot of countries where people are in warmer climates, they tend to use a lot of spices. And they do that in the South as well. And so it just seemed natural to kind of bring those flavors in, do it in my own way. And the good thing is most recipes are amenable to manipulation, depending on how you do it.
You know, that kind of culinary adaptation can be a real tightrope walk. There have been so many bad examples of bad fusion food. What were the most important lessons you learned that allowed you to marry these different cuisines so effectively?
So when I cook, I really don't cook for a restaurant. So I'm not really looking to impress people. I'm not really looking to plate beautifully. I'm just looking to cook things that I think I would like to eat, my husband would like to eat, my friends would like to eat, my family would like to eat. And then, of course, for the home cooks. So I'm looking just to play with flavor in the kitchen, and I'm not really looking to do something on a more ambassadorial scale and, you know, build things in different layers. I do flavor in layers, but I'm not really looking to make multiple components at a meal. And at the end of the day, I think a dish is strong when it tastes good and it's cooked well. And I'm coming always from the home cook's perspective. So I think it's a much different audience that I'm trying to connect with.
How deep does the adaptation go? When you feel a need for comfort food, for example, do you turn to traditional Indian dishes that you grew up with, or the American dishes that you've learned to love, or is it a combination of two?
It's definitely a little bit of both. So it's definitely, of course, what I want to eat at the moment. It's not necessarily always Indian, and it's not necessarily always American, but it's what's around me. I feel that having grown up in both these countries now as an adult, and hopefully a much more mature one, the thing that I want to do is have both of them with me. And so often there are things like, I'll give you an example, rice pudding, right? I feel like every country has a rice pudding of some sort. India has two types. There's kheer and then there's firni, which is a ground rice flour kind of pudding. And then there's the whole rice grain, which is kheer. And then you come to America and then there's rice pudding here too. And so, you know, it's easy to draw in those spices and those flavors. And those are the things that matter to me at the end of the day. Like, I want it to taste good. I'm really not looking to say this is traditional or this is not. I always stay away from that because I feel that's not what I'm looking to do. And that's where I always come from, that should it taste good? Does it taste good? Will it execute well? And will I eat it at the end of the day? And of course, will others want to eat it?
Photography is so important to your work. You started as a blogger. You have a very distinctive look. How did you develop that signature visual style?
Okay, so of course, I didn't start out that way. I was photographing like pretty much all food media does. So, you know, I was learning how to play with light. And then I also realized a lot of my photos were just looking like everyone else's. At the same time, I love to cook. And one of the things I really want to do was kind of showcase not only the final dishes or the ingredients that you commonly see, but also the process of cooking. And I wanted to do it in my own way. And I always think about these things happening like it's a ballerina on stage and the spotlight is only on her, which is why I cut out a lot of the light in my photos, because the focus is then just happening only on the process or the food at that point. And everything else is noise and falls aside. I also use my hands. Another reason why I do that is because I want photos to be instructional, so people are attracted to them. But I feel sometimes, especially with more complicated recipes that involve a lot of technique, it's easier to remember things when they're visually happening. It acts as a better guide than words. And then one of the things, having worked in a kitchen, you know, I've always wanted to kind of represent people who don't look or sound like everyone else. You don't see these people in the front of the kitchen. And that was something that I really wanted to do and give them a voice through just showing my hands in the photos. One of the things when I started out with blogging and even photographing for print journals and magazines, I really didn't find a space for myself. A lot of the mainstream food media was pretty much, you know, focused on white people. And there was, I didn't really know if there was something that I could share because I didn't feel like I was a part of it. And then having worked in a kitchen, I would work with people that were from all over the country. So you'd have all over the world, actually. So you'd have people who were immigrants, people who grew up here. Some were from Asia. Some were from the Middle East. Some were from Iran. Some were from India, like me. And I'd never see them in front of the restaurant. And so that kind of made me wonder why this representation was never there, because these are the people actually producing the food for us to eat. And so when I started to photograph food, my skin is brown, so I really couldn't change anything. And so that was a way when I said, oh, I'm going to like do these instructional photos. This became a way for me to kind of give them a voice in a much more subtle way. I was trying to do my bit to kind of represent the people that I worked with. So hopefully kids that kind of want to get into this field and don't look like or sound like people that are already in it and well-established, they kind of feel like they have a place in there. And that was something that I was missing, and I hope that my work kind of gives them that.
That's such an important point, and it's so easy to overlook. Nick Sharma, thank you so much for being on Splendid Table and talking to us.
Thank you for having me, Russ. It was great to be here.
Nick Sharma's book is called Season, Big Flavors, Beautiful Food, and he writes a column for the San Francisco Chronicle. Russ Parsons' latest book is called How to Pick a Peach. And in the spirit of giving, Nick left us with a whole bunch of recipes. Hot green chutney roasted chicken, a ginger lentil millet bowl, and his spiced meatloaf. And they're all at splendidtable.org.